We've given Russia two paths. There's a path of diplomacy and dialogue, one that I engaged in with Foreign Minister Lavrov just last week in Geneva. But there's also a path of its renewed aggression and massive consequences that we have been building now for many weeks.
You haven't been building nothing, Padre. Not a thing. Welcome to the show. Guys, it's Monday. I am Dana Lash. It is good to be with you today, starting the week out right. And a lot of things, we're going to be a little foreign policy, probably heavy a little bit, looking at some of the vax stuff as well. But happy Monday to you. All kinds of stuff to get to today. First and foremost, I know you've seen all of these headlines with Ukraine. And we're going to do a little, it's going to be a little bit different today. Well, not really. I mean, it's going to be a little bit different in that we're going to do a history dive, because I'm livid at some of the stuff that I'm reading from people who are historical illiterates. We have, and I've said it before, a crazy economic illiteracy in this country. And we also have a crazy historical illiteracy in this country. It's really embarrassing, some of the hot takes I've seen people give when they've been when they're talking about Ukraine and Russia and the prospect of conflict. And we're going to do a deep dive on that. Let me give you just some of the headlines that we're looking at right now that have brought us to this point. So first, number one, with Ukraine, NATO strengthening. And there's a little caveat to that as it relates to Germany. NATO is strengthening their Eastern European flank. Russia's accusing the West of hysteria. NATO has sent reinforcements to Eastern Europe. Kremlin says it's the West, not Russia, escalating tensions. It's not our troops there on the border with Ukraine. It's not them. The United Kingdom has been withdrawing some staff and dependents from the Kiev embassy. And the U.S. is considering, Joe Biden's considering sending a couple thousand extra troops for NATO's eastern flank source. So NATO said that they were putting their forces on standby, reinforcing Eastern Europe. They're sending ships and fighter jets. Russia says it's escalation. They deny that they're planning an invasion. But now they're citing the Western response as evidence to support its own narrative that Russia is the target, not the instigator in the situation, which we all know is garbage. And so one of the things that from the White House, and I'm sure that this is going to be one of the top questions asked at today's presser, is whether or not Biden's going to send thousands of troops to NATO's eastern flank. They said up to 5,000 at one point could be deployed. Now, one Polish official said that Warsaw disagrees with sending troops to Ukraine. And it doesn't look like there's a lot of, it doesn't look like anybody's on the same page, honestly. And it seems a little nuts. Anthony Blinken has said that they don't rule out having any kind of U.S. military involvement. Now, remember, this week, too, we're supposed to hear, or Russia's supposed to get this written response from Joe Biden, the response to their demands. Their demands about getting out of basically all of the former Soviet republics that NATO has a presence in. And so a lot of stuff happening. This, of course, then there was the bungling of the diplomat situation. Now, this, I think, is kind of hysterical. State Department is ordering the families of all American personnel at the U.S. Embassy in Ukraine to leave. And it's warning people against traveling to Ukraine, saying, oh, they're citing increased threats of a Russian military action. And not even the United Kingdom has removed all of their, they haven't even removed all of their diplomats from Kiev. So to me, this seems a little hysterical. And I mean, it sounds like another hasty evacuation, which Joe Biden is now known for, these hasty evacuations. And this, they said that this, the UK's removed some. The State Department said that they wanted to get their people out because they apparently think that something's inevitable, that it's going to be coming down. So then, what did I tell you too about Nord Stream 2 and Germany? What did I tell you? Didn't I tell you a year ago, even before then, if Germany is getting their energy from Russia, they're going to be less likely to side with NATO on things, correct? So this is one headline, and I have another one coming. on this topic. Gas supplies could be diverted from Asia amid fears of war between Russia and Ukraine. The big issue that's putting a wrench into everything is Germany's dependence on Russian gas. It's made it particularly vulnerable. To shore up political support, the U.S. government, because apparently Angela Merkel or German's government is absolute, they're all a bunch of rat bastards and they can't ask for to do anything for themselves. Their U.S. government has requested that Qatar, the U.S. government, I guess on behalf of Germany, have decided that we're going to ask them to see if they could step up some of these resources in the event that energy from Russia is disrupted. Now, that's the world's largest exporter of LNG. They're trying to find a way to help provide supplies, et cetera, et cetera. I feel like there are people who are trying to beat the drum of war. And I feel like it's also a distraction. Please do not mistake my giving you these headlines as me thinking that this is because I'm setting this up to tear it down. I hope you realize this. So the other thing as it relates to Germany, let me pull this up. So the United States apparently has been sending weaponry to Ukraine. Germany is blocking their NATO ally Estonia from giving military support to Ukraine by refusing to issue permits for German origin weapons to be exported to Kiev as it braces for potential Russian invasion. So Germany doesn't want to get involved because they get their energy from Russia. I told you this was going to be an issue. I told you it was. Now, before we get into some of this other stuff, let me just lay this on the table for you. There was a march in D.C. on Sunday. Big rally. I know you guys saw it. We talked about it Friday. People can't get their kids into classrooms full time in this country. You can't even go into some cities and go to restaurants or go into hotels without having proof of your double, triple vaxxed, whatever, natural immunity be damned. But this administration thinks that the same people will consider traveling thousands of miles across the pond to fight. Are you kidding me? So all of this could have been avoided. It could have been avoided. Ukraine's got to fight its own wars. No offense, but I think that it is high time for politicians to stop expecting that American troops pay with blood as a remedy or substitute for nightmare foreign policy. I've seen a lot of people give a lot of comparisons to, Czechoslovakia and World War II. Just so you know, I am an insane World War II history buff. And I am livid over some of the stupid hot takes that I'm seeing from people who are supposed to be educated. People who have bestowed upon them the coveted blue check mark from the Twitter glorified baristas. We think you're important enough to show everyone that you are who you say you are. Why does it matter? Ukraine is not like Czechoslovakia. And you know, a lot of people are comparing Ukraine to Czechoslovakia, which they didn't do, by the way, when Russia invaded Crimea and annexed it. When they were invading Ukraine last time, they annexed Crimea. They didn't do this. They didn't do this when under Obama Biden. They're starting to now turn on Biden, and they're just sort of flabbergasted at this. Remember, again, 2 weeks ago, Democrats used that Jim Crow relic, the filibuster that they hate. They used it to stop sanctions on Russia. So keep that in mind too. I disagree that Russia has global ambitions beyond the restoration of the Soviet Union, and therein lies the difference, in my educated estimation, between Russia and Vladimir. Putting the genocide and the anti-Semitism aside for a moment, just to specifically look at the geopolitical machinations here. In the 40s and in the lead up to World War II, Hitler wanted to dominate the world. He wanted his empire to stretch around the world. Russia does not have that sort of global ambition. They want to reestablish the Soviet Union. I definitely think that Vladimir Putin wants to do that. Hitler wanted a global empire. And I think that's the very first difference. You need to understand your opponent. And remember, the biggest mistakes that Hitler made was not understanding his opponent. Not understanding, for instance, when they decided to go to war with Britain, not understanding you're literally going to war with, you know, up until that time, the greatest naval power on the planet. And you don't understand this. They did not understand their opponent. You have to understand your opponent. Hitler wanted a global empire. Here's the other thing that's really important to note, because a lot of people keep talking about sanctions and they keep bringing this up the statement that will make me punch you in the face is to say that United States carried out, what is the phrase? Hold up. I have so many notes here. That the United States, that it was economic warfare. The people who say that the United States' economic warfare spurred the attack on Pearl Harbor, I think they should be stripped, naked, and whipped publicly, because that is a historically illiterate remark. Or you can come physically fight me, but I think that you'd rather be stripped and whipped. I say this because it ignores everything in the lead up to conflict in the Pacific. There are some people who find allyship with the right that say this stupid stuff. They ignore what Japan was actually doing. They ignore, for instance, that the United States had supplied Japan with over 80% of their oil. I mean, we were literally fueling their fight in taking over China. We were fueling the rape of Nanjing, for instance. We were fueling their atrocities. We were fueling all of it. And so when we decided to implement sanctions and withdraw that, that's when they had their tantrum. But all of that started 90 years earlier with Commodore Perry when he arrived, and Japan was fast forwarded into a rapid modernization because they wanted to avoid exploitation that they had seen, in their estimation, exploitation that they had seen in other countries. So that stage was laid way, but all of this is, and we're going to dive into this because there's so many ignorant comments here. And the reason that it needs to be addressed is because all of these people are using these historical illiterate comparisons to try to justify conflict today. They're using it to try to justify Biden's decision and maybe eventual choice to send troops over to Ukraine. They're using all of that to say, oh, look, we'll see, we did this here. That's why we couldn't do sanctions on Russia, because look what happened with Japan. It's why we can't do increased sanctions on China. Look what happened in Japan. Ignoring nearly a century buildup of what led to that point. So it's really important for you to understand that. And we're going to talk about it this hour. So we're also going to get into, meanwhile, in China, because China is banning Hollywood films. This is huge culturally, and we're going to explain that. We got a lot of stuff to get into, and we got some economic stuff as well, so you don't want to miss it. I want to take a quick moment and thank my friends at Patriot Mobile for their support. Whether it's this show, CPAC, or the March for Life, these folks are always there supporting all of it because they are fully in the trenches with you. And that's why I'm proud to partner with Patriot Mobile, America's only Christian conservative cell phone provider, and I would like for you to do that as well. They offer broad nationwide coverage. In fact, they use the same towers as the major carriers, so you get the same great nationwide coverage. Plus, you get the peace of mind that your money isn't supporting the left. Patriot Mobile has plans to fit any budget, and their 100% U.S.-based customer support team provides exceptional customer support. Patriot Mobile shares your values and supports organizations fighting for religious freedom, constitutional rights, sanctity of life, and our veteran and first responder heroes. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT. Get free activation with offer code Dana. Veterans and first responders save even more, so make the switch today. Support a company that loves America, loves you, and shares your values. PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Caltech.
I'm sure that you all saw that there was a big rally yesterday, right, at the Lincoln Memorial against the vaccine mandates. There were lots and lots of people that turned out for this, according to the Washington Examiner. A lot of people spoke, including Dr. Robert Malone, who we had on the program on Friday. But no violence, nothing like that. Crazy. But there were tons of people there. And this was right after you had the March of Life, too. Two big things of for liberty-minded people back-to-back, and there was no violence like there was with Antifa. Pretty amazing, right? American megabanks, including Citi and JPM, are ordering workers back to the office in London and in New York City. Apparently, they've had enough of pretending to care about coronavirus safety precautions that don't actually do anything for safety. So they're recalling workers to the office. Citigroup emailed a notice to staffers in New York City telling them to get ready to go back. And they said that they're going to, they'll monitor health data, blah, 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 but whatever. Meanwhile, they told the London staff to go to their, be in their offices 3 days a week. And that's going to, and then they're going to start increasing that slowly. So there you have it. A majority of millennials and Gen Zers, they want limitations on abortion, according to a new poll via Real Clear Politics. They do not believe in abortion up to birth because that's one of the things that Ralph Northam in Virginia, remember him, the guy who was in blackface all the time? Literally, he was, because they gave him a racially horrible nickname about it. But they're concerned about the extremes of it, according to a couple of new polls, actually. Millennials and Gen Zers, they think that what some Democrats want goes way too far. And this is some very interesting data. And it's actually pretty evenly sampled, too. I was like kind of glancing on break at some of the crosstabs. I thought it was, look at that, very evenly sampled. This comes from Daily Caller. Jimmy Garoppolo shouted blank the Packers after beating Green Bay. San Francisco 49ers quarterback hit a very blunt message. And apparently it made television too, didn't it? Didn't it go over broadcast? Yeah. So, oh boy, there you go. We have more to come. Don't go anywhere. More The Dana Show after this. The Kel-Tec's commitment to innovation and quality truly sets them apart. A privately owned family company that began making one-of-a-kind American-made firearms in 1995. In 1999, Kel-Tec launched their brand on the scene by forever redefining the concealed carry handgun. And from that point on, Kel-Tec continues to innovate and create never-before-seen firearms, pistols, rifles, and shotguns alike, never copying firearms, always innovating new ones. Kel-Tec believes in respect, family, the right to bear arms, and in the love we all have for our great country. They do things right. All Kel-Tec firearms are proudly made right here in America in a true family culture that embraces every employee and where people are genuinely happy to come to work. The Kel-Tec's commitment to innovation and quality truly sets them apart. Find out more about Kel-Tec firearms by visiting KelTecWeapons.com for a deeper dive on all aspects of their innovative firearms. That's KelTecWeapons.com to learn more about my friends at Kel-Tec. Kel-Tec, game-changing innovation and performance.
Listen to The Dana Show live on the Odyssey app. Weekdays, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Time.
As a result of the progress we've made, record economic growth, record job growth, faster economic recovery than any other nation on earth, we are better positioned globally than we have been in a long, long time. Intel's historic investment is one example. It's not the only one.
Trying to figure out where we're actually better in what reality. Welcome back to the show, guys. It's good to be with you Monday. I actually was a victim of my own sexism. I had to go put a jacket on because it was so dang cold in here. It was so cold. So I had to go and put a jacket on. Heaven forbid I lower or raise the temperature. That's not going to happen. Welcome back. Dana Lash with you. Go find me at Substack. Sign up for the newsletter. All good things. So this, we're not actually better on a world stage. We're going to talk. I think we got Stephen Yates on later on today. Yes, third hour. And we're going to talk with him about some of this stuff because it is... I saw this piece over at Financial Times, and it was going into Russia and China's plans for New World Order. Can I just be real? Like, we're the United States. Why are we reacting with any level of hesitation towards one world leader that was offended by Winnie the Pooh and another world leader who's got his face pulled tighter than Pelosi? You know what I'm saying? I mean, I realize that Vladimir... Can I just sidebar again on this? Sorry. I realize that Vladimir Putin likes to project this aura of manliness, right? With all of his shirtless fishing pictures and his hunting stuff and him going and thieving all those reporters in Siberia from a puma... and all of this stuff. But dude, you can't be manly when you're getting plastic surgery. You're a dude, okay? You're not Jocelyn Wildenstein, Googler. You're not her. I mean, for real. If he pulls that face any tauter, he's going to look like a damn pillow person from the 80s. I had one of those. Did y'all have one of those? That's why I know what they are. How are you projecting this like certain level of manliness when you have your face pulled as tight as a sheet on a display bed in a JCPenney's? You're supposed to be manly? Jeez. So we were talking before we went to break. And I really want to be careful in the way I present this to you, because I don't want to present something to you and have you think, oh my gosh, we're going to go to war. It's going to be the most awful thing. Oh my God. I think that it serves as a distraction, and it's also what happens when you have a completely incompetent president who bungles foreign policy. So the reason I'm talking about this is to tear it down and to address these ridiculous historical comparisons of people who are trying to use this stuff to justify entering some kind of conflict with Russia over Ukraine, right? And we were talking a little bit about sanctions, because 2 weeks ago, Democrats who went on and on and on about Jim Crow filibuster, we got to get rid of it so we can nationalize voting, everything's Jim Crow, the Voting Rights Act, if you don't pass it, it's, if you don't pass the John Lewis Voter Act, it's Jim Crow, if you use the filibuster, it's Jim Crow, except when we do it, like right now, to stop the sanctions against Russia. And that's exactly what happened 2 weeks ago. Democrats invoked the filibuster to stop sanctions against Russia. Now, I was told by reliable sources that it was Trump who was the Russian stooge, not Biden. Yet here we are.
Did you say reliable sources told you that?
Yes, Brian Stelter.
Oh, I see.
What's reverse anthropomorph? Well, I guess the real time. It's like a human version of an anthropomorphic potato. Right? Where the butt opens and the face comes out. Oh. Just kind of like Putin. Anyway, so I did not set that up on purpose. It just naturally happened. So the reason I bring this up, because these headlines I was sharing, ITV, there's a bunch of different headlines talking about how Germany doesn't want Estonia to help provide any kind of weaponry or do anything to help Ukraine. And Germany's very nervous about its energy supply. Duh, that's what happens. You get rid of all your nuclear power and you decide to rely upon somebody like Russia with all their dirty gas. Okay. But as it relates to the sanctions, Japan was sanctioned. They had over 80% of their fuel was U.S. supplied. Right. And they were going to what is now modern day Indonesia, and they were going further in the South Pacific because they wanted the resources, phosphate and the oil and everything else. Now, here's what people don't realize. Is that, what is it, like 90 something years earlier, it was Commodore Matthew Perry when he arrived in Japan, and I guess Edo then, that was after the shogunate, because you had the end of the shogunate, and then you had the more of a democratic rule established. At that particular point, you had Commodore Perry arrive, and it was opening Japan up for trade. Japan wanted to modernize very quickly because they saw, for instance, British expansion into India, and they thought that was exploitation, and they did not want anything like that to happen with them. And they also hated China. And they actually, Japanese Navy actually dealt Russia a defeat. It was like one of the first, people they ever defeated in naval warfare. Interesting fact. But they did not, they wanted to avoid any kind of basically like colonization, like what they saw with Britain and India. And so they wanted to modernize very, very quickly and be taken seriously on the world stage. But here's the problem. In doing that, they also decided that they were going to try to take everything over. And they went to war with China. And the atrocities that they were committing against, you know, I mean, there's a lot of history there that I wish that we had just a whole hour to focus on. but they needed more oil to wage war because they wanted to go, they wanted to continue expanding into China. That's the whole point. That's what they wanted to do. They needed more oil. And everything that is happening today actually was, you know, set back when Commodore Perry arrived. And this was after, again, when the Japanese emperor, they ended the shogunate. So they had rapid modernization. They didn't want to be exploited. So they began industrializing, and they wanted to modernize their military. And they themselves also wanted to colonize. Japan wanted to colonize. And so they ended up getting control over a number of territories, and they wanted more Chinese territory. But in order to do that, they needed to have more energy. And the response for the United States, basically shutting the spigot of oil off for Japan, was their further incursion into China, their rapidly expanding military, which rattled a lot of other governments around the world. The relationship that Japan had with Washington at that point was deteriorating into nothing. And they realized that in order to do what they needed to do and secure resources that they needed to continue their expansion, this was about the time that normally we kept all of our forces, all of our naval forces, except for our air carrier ships, which is very, very, our carriers were not there at Pearl Harbor, which is very interesting. Normally we kept them on the coast of California, but we decided to put them at Pearl Harbor, and it was considered to be relatively safe. I mean, there was not really anything that was going to be able to make it there. And it was also, it extended the United States' hand way, 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 way out into the Pacific. And that was a problem for Japan. So Japan knew that in order to go and secure more resources in the Southern Pacific, they were going to have to take out our fleet there in Pearl Harbor. And the element of surprise, what gets me is that for 12 days when they were sailing, not a single person realized what was happening, except when they took out, I don't know if you knew this, it was a couple days before Pearl Harbor, they actually took out a Japanese sub. That was actually the first shot, the first, fatalities and all of that for World War II in the Pacific. They knew. Long story short, that's a whole other subject. And the reason I bring this up, if you're just tuning in, is because people are trying to say that sanctions against Russia, that's going to fuel this. That's why we can't use sanctions. That's why we can't do stuff like this. Because realize what happened. People who only read the headlines or only read like the bold in the history books, they're the ones who like to compare this and say, oh, well, it was the sanctions against Japan that got us into World War II. That's how Pearl Harbor got bombed. And it wasn't, as I've been explaining. It wasn't. So here's the other thing that I wanted to point out. And I remarked about this. I was actually watching a World War II documentary where it was looking at our industrial strength. The United States industrial strength, and this is why I hate the Green New Deal, was truly, our industrial strength in the 30s and 40s was truly remarkable. Of the ships that were damaged in Pearl Harbor, within 3 months, they were in service. They were back in service. Pretty amazing, isn't it? It stunned Japan. Battle of the Coral Sea, that was the first time, that was the when the post Pearl Harbor when we really socked it, gave it to them. And they were stunned at how quick. But see, the thing is that the military leaders at the time, particularly the guy, Yamamoto, who was controlling the Japanese Navy, knew this. He'd been at Harvard. He'd been over in the United States, you know, quite a bit. He knew the level of industry in the United States. And he also knew how much we love our battleships. I mean, come on. And so he was like one of the only people in Japanese leadership at the time who was saying, no, don't do that to them. Don't, because you don't realize what's going to happen. But when he committed, he committed. And so my whole point in bringing this up is that there was a level of industry in the United States at the time where we were self-sufficient. We got our resources. We manufactured everything stateside. We had those ships that were damaged in Pearl Harbor. They were back out in battle in the South Pacific within 3 months. Do you honestly think that could happen today with as much manufacturing as we outsource? Do you honestly think the United States would be able to turn something like that around today? I mean, Japan, their jaws hit the deck. That was one of the things, and there's written correspondence to this point between naval leaders and the emperor and their representatives underscoring this. They were shocked. I mean, they knew that the United States was an industrial giant, and that's why the element of surprise. They knew what they were doing. They thought if they could just cripple the United States at Pearl Harbor, they could go and secure the resources that they needed, the phosphates, the oil, everything else, in what is now Indonesia and the Philippines, etc. But we stopped that. And then shortly after Battle of Coral Sea, it was Battle of Midway, and it was turning point. So my whole point in bringing up the sanctions is because the comparison of sanctions against Russia and sanctions against Japan is historically illiterate. The stage had been set with Japan 90 years earlier. With Russia, there are still so many options on the table. And I think you also have to understand that with Japan, too, it was a little bit more than just regional control. There, you have to understand your enemy. And if you don't understand your enemy, that's rule number one of Sun Tzu. If you're not understanding your enemy, you are destined to fail. Here's another fun fact, by the way, about Pearl Harbor. Do you realize, what was his name? Kimmel. I've never liked a guy named Kimmel. It was Kimmel. He was the guy who ran things in Pearl Harbor. And he was the one who decided, we're going to guard the aircraft. We're going to keep all the aircraft in the middle of the airfield, making it real easy for the bomber, for Japanese planes to bomb. And he was the one who, because he and FDR were so nervous about Japanese, because there was a significant portion of Hawaii's population that was Japanese, they didn't trust anybody. So they wanted to keep all of their anti-aircraft ammunition. It was all stored and locked away to prevent saboteurs, right? And so when the dive bombers and when Japan's planes come over that ridge at 7:30 in the morning there in Pearl Harbor on a Sunday, they had to scramble and try to find the keys to get the anti-aircraft ammunition. And it literally made, and this is what I talk about, Safe Storage Act and anything regarding firearms and safe storage and smart gun technology. It makes innocent people nothing more than spectators in their own destruction. Fun fact. If you're joining us, we've been talking about the sanctions against Japan and how sanctions, comparing that to sanctions against Russia, are historically illiterate. There's so much here. There is so much to get into. And again, I want to caution you into thinking that, because I think that the situation with Ukraine is definitely a distraction and a headache, both for the Biden administration. And I'm going to explain that in detail. They need to distract. They need something to try to get some excitement in the administration. And don't think that any kind of wag the dog situation is beneath them. And by the way, if Biden is seriously going to consider, because CNN's now reporting that Biden is in the final steps of identifying military units to send to Eastern Europe, why don't you send your damn son? Send Hunter Biden. Don't send our sons and fathers and brothers. Friends, we're on the brink of an economic crisis, really. I mean, thanks to the economic policies and the jobless numbers, that everything's been abysmal. Inflation is starting to increase. We're seeing supply chain disruptions. It's kind of crazy. Instead of following the former president's pro-business agenda that had the economy booming, now the new administration wants to tax corporations, tax small businesses, pass trillion-dollar bills that we can't pay for. You need to take proactive steps to protect your wealth and your retirement by investing in gold and precious metals, and legacy precious metals can help. Washington keeps printing money and it devalues your dollar. Gold offers you a hedge against inflation. As the dollar gets weaker, gold gets stronger. So the folks at Legacy Precious Metals are the gold standard when it comes to investing in precious metals. They have a team of experts who can counsel you on the best options for you and your family. Don't leave your retirement to chance. Call Legacy Precious Metals at 866-580-2088 or visit them online to download their free investor's guide that's full of all kinds of useful information at legacypminvestments.com. Visit Legacy, letter P, letter M, investments.com.
Your one-stop shop for the information you need to fight back. If you're going to have to learn stuff, you might as well enjoy it. The Dana Show.
I got to share with you this tweet. I just dropped it in Slack. I was like, dudes, dudes, dudes. It's from Gazprom. This is just this morning. Gazprom. They write how gas reserves in Europe and Ukraine's UGS facilities hit all-time lows. According to Gas Infrastructure Europe, and this is going to make big, major sense here in a second, According to Gas Infrastructure Europe, the working gas inventories in Europe's underground gas storage facilities were 26%, blah, blah, blah. The level of gas reserves in Germany's facilities dropped below 42% to 41%. And they say that they're acting like big, giant trolls. Do you know who Gazprom is, right? Y'all know? They're the people who get, that's Nord Stream 2. Interesting. That's their pipeline. Very, very interesting indeed. So coming up, we're going to get into some of the latest because CNN is reporting that, Biden is absolutely considering, apparently they're in the final stages of determining if they're sending military units. And I told Kane on break, Biden and Democrats couldn't sanction Russia, but they'll send our loved ones to bear the burden. Get out with that noise. We got all kinds of stuff coming up for you. Don't go anywhere.
If you are focused on deterrence, why not do what Ukraine is asking you to do and sanction now? Take action now. Why keep it as a punitive matter after the fact?
Well, first, we are, as I said, taking action now. We built up across these many weeks a very strong coalition of countries that has made it very clear it will take very significant action if Russia commits renewed acts of aggression.
Right, and Ukraine is saying you could go harder. You could be stronger.
We've provided very significant military assistance to Ukraine. We've been taking action against Russian agents in Ukraine. But as to the sanctions, the most important thing we can do is to use them as a deterrent, as a means of dissuading Russia from engaging in further aggression. Once sanctions are triggered, you lose the deterrent effect.
Oh, man, I am made of invectives right now. That's Anthony Blinken. Welcome back to the program. I'm Dana Loesch. Very good to be with you this Monday. We're getting you set up so you understand not only everything that's happening currently with Russia and Ukraine, but I'm also setting you up so that you understand the historical precedent and how all of these comparisons that these, I was going to call him a name and I can't remember the name I wanted to call him now. But War Inc., all of the historically illiterate comparisons that War Inc. likes to make, like, oh, well, this is why we can't do sanctions in Russia. Look what happened with Japan. We just destroyed that last hour. Let's look at all, you know, and we're going to get into more of it. But how it's not a justification for entering into a land war with Russia. And that's what we're looking at right now. As I said last hour, I want to be careful in the attention that I give it and the amount of attention that I give it and not to overplay the insignificance, I think, because while I'm focusing on it, I'm more focusing on it to kind of tear it down, not to hype it and beat any kind of war drum or anything like that. And just because we're focusing on it as a way to deconstruct the argument that people are trying to use to argue for conflict, you shouldn't think that all hell's going to break loose right now, everything weeping and gnashing of the teeth, you know, here we are. I do think that this is a welcome distraction for the Biden administration. I do think that the Biden administration would love to use something like this as a way to save him from his high unfavorability. I mean, really. Here's my other point. Does Biden honestly think that committing to a war over Ukraine is going to save him from his high unfavorability? Does he honestly think? I mean, you're asking people who for the past 2 years have sacrificed their children's education, who have sacrificed their own and their family's well-being with mask rules, movement restrictions, with vaccine passports and everything else, you're asking these same people to sacrifice more and for what? For a conflict halfway across the world involving two powers, neither of which are the United States? For what? When people can fight for themselves, they should. And I want to point out to you how everyone always says, oh, the United States, they always talk down about the United States, world police. There's a reason why South Park mocked that. And they were really actually kind of mocking Europe's perception, not so much, you know, and War Inc. in a way. The United States is always the one that's expected to go and clean it up. The United States is always the one. Now, I will say, with this administration and the importance of that soundbite that we just played, the sanctions, it is super insane to me to think that sanctions were not going to work with Russia, or that it's too late to do them. I was looking at this piece here, which was pretty, kind of amazed me. Pull this up. France and Europe are dealing, this is a Finance Yahoo. French nuclear giant's fall risks energy security for all of Europe. It's Electricité de France. It's a political crisis for Paris. It's a growing economic threat for much of Europe. The giant nuclear operator, once a source of national pride and reliable low-cost energy, has become a nightmare for investors and an increasingly wobbly pillar of regional energy security. So this other option for Europe to get energy is faltering. The timing's terrible. They said it's exacerbating Europe's severe energy crisis. Prices in Germany have been dragged, shrinking power supply margins. I want to point out that in 2019, the United States officially became the net exporter of all oil, including refined petroleum, crude. We were the world's largest producer. Now, what does that mean? This is what Keystone also was about. Keystone was taking oil. This was a partnership with Canada. We were working with Canada to add oil to the world supply. This is something that the left doesn't understand. The left assumed that Keystone was about our oil supply, and it wasn't. It was about adding that supply to the world market. We export quite a bit. We had passed Saudi Arabia as the top exporter of oil in the world. The Saudis. We, gas, oil. Oh my goodness. And then what happened? We had this administration come to power, and the first thing that they wanted to do was stop Keystone. All of the environmental arguments were specious. The environmental argument was that it was safer and more and healthier for the environment to take the oil in a train than a pipeline. You know, a train that also uses fossil fuels to run and has a higher rate of accident than the pipeline. So there was a significant, it's more expensive and it's slower to get that to, it's still being drilled, but it's not, takes a lot longer, and it's not as safe to get it to the world stage, world market. The administration decided to clamp down on leases for oil and gas on public land. They mulled over adding further restrictions for what was resourced on private land. This administration has done everything that you would do if you wanted to limit our exports for fuel, for oil, for gas, while proposing what they call the Green New Deal, which is nothing more than a way to make energy more expensive for Americans while outsourcing every key point to China. Now, what did I tell you that last hour when we were talking about how one of the reasons the United States was so powerful and why we were able to handle a conflict with two theaters. You had Europe and you had the Pacific. I mean, technically you had the Pacific, Atlantic, and Europe, but you understand what I'm saying. We were able to handle it because we were an industrial monster. We were huge. We were able to, like I said, after all these ships were damaged, if they weren't destroyed in Pearl Harbor, we had them back out within 3 months and we took on the Japanese and battled the Coral Sea. Now look at us today. We can't even keep damn food on our supermarket shelves because of an administration-imposed inflation that is not temporary. You don't see that going everywhere else in the world, but you see it here in the United States because of this administration. Having trouble keeping full supermarket shelves. We can't get chips for a lot of our electronics. We can't. I mean, there's a number of things we can't do. Look at the price of cars. I mean, it's insane. We have outsourced the thing that made us a world power. And we have an administration that wants to continue to do it. And now look at the situation with Russia. I don't give a rat's backside what your opinion of Trump is. It is stupid and irrelevant at this point. The last administration, inarguably, was positioning America to be the entity that Europe could rely on, that countries could rely on for uninterrupted energy. Because that is power. It is influence. Would you rather have that kind of influence or power wielded by a constitutional republic or wielded by a communist state? The last administration understood it. This administration doesn't. This is what we're faced with right now. You have, a friend of mine said, history is littered with empires that decided to start dumb wars to distract from problems in their own backyard. Wag the Dog was all about that. It was all about that. No, but instead of sending our loved ones, this administration sent Hunter Biden. Send Hunter Biden. We are still learning about how much money the Bidens were making with communist China. Send Hunter Biden over there. We had so many instances. There are so many exits on this highway. And this administration stupidly wouldn't take a single one of them. Just awful. In the meantime, China's banned Hollywood films and wants to build its own movie empire. You knew this was coming. Hollywood tried to kiss the butt of China so much. They removed Taiwan's flag from Maverick's jacket and Top Gun sequel. It was the reason why Quentin Tarantino told China to go pound sand. They didn't like the way that Bruce Lee was portrayed in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And they wanted Quentin Tarantino to change it so that it would be accepted by their very, very strict Chinese film commission and it could be shown on all their theaters. And Quentin Tarantino told them, probably very colorfully, to go pound sand. Now, the CCP is increasingly using their domestic films as the conduit for propaganda. They don't have a lot of room for foreign views. And because of the pandemic, there was a lot of unpredictability that came from the West in terms of films. So now, Disney, they've been kissing the butt of China for so long. Now, Marvel titles were blocked. China blocked most of Disney's highest grossing films last year. And it doesn't even have to be about the film content. If there's a comment made by the film director, someone on the crew, director, actor, whatever, they're blocked.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Caltech.
Goldie Hawn, and I'm telling you, she's one of the best. She's absolutely one of the best. She was discussing the political activism of Hollywood. And as a Hollywood couple, Kurt and Goldie are they're awesome. She was discussing the idea of staying in her lane when it comes to politics, and she thinks that entertainers should perform for all people. And she says that that's the reality of it, that you should entertain everybody, which is good. By the way, speaking of Hollywood, I hear that I've been reading that the Oscars are desperate to have Ricky Gervais host. Because they think because it's a bore fest and no one watches. Oh, please let that happen and just have a Golden Globes part two. His last Golden Globes host before the pandemic. Oh my gosh, it would be great. A cruise ship headed to Miami returns to the Bahamas over an arrest warrant, according to The Hill. It was a Miami-based federal judge that issued an arrest warrant for the Crystal Cruises Crystal Symphony cruise ship. It was first reported in USA Today. The Peninsula Petroleum Far East filed a lawsuit against Crystal Cruises for unpaid bills and all kinds of stuff. I don't like anything named Crystal. I don't even like Crystal Palace because it's named Crystal. I just think of, like, what I think of is Lucite heels and strip clubs whenever I hear the name Crystal. Is that right? Kane's dying. But you know what? Am I wrong? Say it, really? See, I'm telling you. Life imitates art. Irish cops are investigating a dead dude who was brought to collect his pension. Police in Ireland are investigating reports that, really, it's like a weekend at Bernie's. Body of a dead dude was brought to a post office in an attempt to collect his pension. The Irish Times said a man who appeared to be in his 60s was dragged into the post office in the town of Carlow on Friday, propped up by two younger men. When questioned by staff, the two fled, leaving behind the older man who was found to be dead. There's still too many Christmas. This is crazy. This is like the one of two Irish headlines, by the way, of Irish people that I had. Also, Americans are souring on the nation's direction in a new NBC News poll. In today's obvious news, they think it's downhill and divisive. Large majorities say that the U.S. is going in the wrong direction. They're falling behind economically. Political polarization will continue. Yes, exactly, because it's all by design. Yeah. Beijing is ordering mass virus testing ahead of the Olympics. It was on for 1 second at my house, and I was like, hell no. We're not watching none of this. We're not watching any lead up. None of it. I changed the channel immediately. It's like, I'm not watching. I'm not going to watch and give ratings to no commies. Ain't going to happen. We have a lot more on the way you do not want to miss, because we have foreign policy, we have virus, we have economics, and the monkey crash with lab monkeys. You need to know about this. This is Resident Evil stuff.
Of all your favorite talk hosts, one of these is not like the others. The Dana Show.
And what we really are working to do is pivot the language to make sure that everybody is as up to date with their COVID-19 vaccines as they personally could be, should be, based on when they got their last vaccine. So importantly, right now, we're pivoting our language. We really want to make sure people are up to date. That means if you recently got your second dose, you're not eligible for a booster, you're up to date. If you are eligible for a booster and you haven't gotten it, you're
not
up to date.
What is the point?
You need to get your booster in order to be up to date.
What is the point? That's Rochelle Walensky, CDC director. Welcome back to the show. I'm Dana Lash. DanaLash.com. What's the point? If it's just about easing symptoms and not reducing transmission, Kane, what's the point?
Yeah, the fifth booster is supposed to work.
What about the seventh booster? Are you fully vaxxed and boosted? Are you boosted? Wait, I'm sure there's a bumper sticker that is about like boosting, right? Can we toxify this word quickly, please? Are you boosted? Go get boosted. Like good, like I want to make it to like a, you know what I mean?
Like a curse word, right?
Uh huh.
Like, go boost yourself.
Yeah, go boost yourself. Oh, we've discovered a new phrase. Anytime anybody asks me anything, I'm just about that. I'm going to be like, go boost yourself.
Boost you.
Oh, I love language. Oh, but they've changed the definition of it. Now it's, I don't even know how the hell many shots it is. But can we be, boosted is just another shot. Yeah. That's all it is. How many shots now? Shots. How many shots now?
Four.
I have never heard that word used so much until now. Maybe PCU, but now. Doesn't do nothing. Doesn't do anything. It's crazy. I got to tell you this too. I saw this story from Politico. No, not Politico. Where's this one at? Oh my gosh, I had so much stuff. Bear with me. It's about this kid that got kicked out of school permanently because he's not wearing his mask. Didn't want to wear his mask. Luke Rosiak had this story, and I think I accidentally clicked. Okay, here it is. So this is crazy. So here's this story. The mom's name is Megan Rafalowski, and her son was permanently kicked out of his elementary school because he didn't wear a mask today. Megan Rafalowski, the mother of a fifth grader at Banneker Elementary in Loudoun County, Virginia, told Luke Rosiak and Daily Wire that her son was being permanently kicked out of his elementary school because he did not wear a mask today. She said, he's sitting in the principal's office. We have a special exception so my son could go to school with the kids he started with. And now the exception was rescinded for a one-time incident. She's been waiting for a call from the superintendent, Scott Zeigler, about masks for 2 months. Tell me that you hate children without telling me that you hate children. So this was Northern Virginia. They are, this is crazy, crazy. The students were told to avoid punishment, wear masks. And if you don't, you're segregated into a separate room. This isn't about education. This is not about education. The mask doesn't work. The mask does not work. It's dumb. That's why I didn't go to SHOT Show. It wasn't NSSF, by the way. And I was very careful with that. It was because Sheldon Adelson doesn't own the expo and all that anymore. It's whoever owns it now. They were the ones who mandated that you had to wear face panties. So stupid. So I am, tell you what. They had 25 kids sitting, non-compliant kids sitting in the auditorium. My son, who has naturally acquired immunity at college, they just got a thing. They have to wear masks for a couple weeks now. He's had it. He's not going to give it anything to you, and you ain't going to get anything from it. Stop it. Stop it. This is not science. This is about control. If it followed science and it was logical, it followed science and it was, you know, backed up by scientific evidence, I'd be like, okay, well, at least you're following science. This is not even following science. You know what? You're turning people who are nice, normal, happy people into resentful people who want to troll you with this crap. That's what it is. I can't tell you the last time. Oh, when I went to my doctor's office, they still had us wear masks. So, okay. So I understand that it's not a law that they made. Or sorry, not even a law. It's not a requirement that they made. But I won't even pin it around my nose. I will put it up. I will put it as haphazardly on my face. And it shows that I think it's stupid. So we went in as because you know, I got to sign in and all this stuff at some doctor's offices, or you have to, like, you know, if you're, it's like your well visit or whatever. That's what I did. And I walk in and you have to wear your mask. It's so contagious, deadly virus. They still do the social distancing in the office. Yes, I am looking for a new doctor because this was stupid. Go up. And there was one pin at the desk. She's like, you can just sign the form with the pen. I go, this pen? I go, is there a mask for the pen? And she looked up at me and I was like, this is the only pen that you have to sign this? I have to wear a mask, but I can touch the pen that some other dirty, contaminated person that probably touched their butt. I literally said this. That probably touched their butt touched. It was not a woman that I was used to conversing with. I've not seen her before. So she was not ready for the level of, like, craziness that was about to unfold. And hands to Sky, and she looked and she's like, if you just, she didn't know what to say, so she just, like, defaulted to repeating, can you just say, you just take the pen and sign the form? I go, with that pen? And I go, what's on my face? What is this? I was like, look, I know you're doing your job, but do you know how stupid this is? I go, it's the deadliestest virus in the world. And I literally can't sit down in your waiting room right now because you've turned some of the chairs. They literally did this. Every other chair you have to sit in, they turned the other chair towards the wall. So you can't sit there, so you can distance. But it's a tiny little waiting room. Deadliest virus in the world. But you just wear basically a sheet of paper over your face. And I'm like, do you honestly think this is doing anything for the deadliest virus in the world? I said, if I was a health inspector and I was making sure that you were following everything required for the deadliest virus in the world, I would fill your office and close it. I go, do you have a clean pen? The last time I did it, I did what I did the last time. Because, you know, I'm a germaphobe. Before the pandemic, I had the Clorox wipes. I had all this stuff. I didn't have to run around and get, I still have never had to go out and replenish anything. That's how, yeah, buddy, that's how much I have because I'm a germaphobe. So I looked at her and I was like, do you have anything to wipe this down? Being a doctor's office and all. I didn't really care. I was just, you know, I was just done with it. If I have the time, I'm going to be a brat. And I was very nice to her, by the way. I was never rude to her. And she was like, I have this tissue. I was like, nope. I go, hold on. And I had the little crossbody on. So I opened it and I'm like, taking out my wipes. And I started cleaning the desk. Started wiping everything down. And then I, in full view, took the thing, signed whatever I needed to sign with my pen with the thing around it, and then laid it down. And it was, because it's ridiculous. Do you see how it doesn't follow science? Do you see this? It's the deadliestest virus in the world. You're in the doctor's office. You got to wear your face panties, but touch this dirty pen. You don't know where everyone's hands have been. But you know what? But it's virtue signaling. That's all it is. It's like, look how obedient we are. We're wearing our face panties that don't do a singular damn thing. No matter how many people you kick off Twitter, they still don't do a damn thing. Maybe if we kick these people off Twitter, the masks will magically work. Nope. Maybe if we remove this video from YouTube, it will make the masks work. That's what they think. That's how they think. Didn't do it. It didn't do it, Kane. All those people, they never made the masks work.
Yeah, if everybody wore a mask, they would work. If everybody gets vaccinated, the vaccines would work. If everyone, you know.
You know why there are car accidents? Because not everyone wears their seatbelt. But here's the thing. If you don't wear your seatbelt, it doesn't make my seatbelt work.
Right. Any less or any more.
Uh-huh. So, yeah. Doesn't make my seatbelt work. See the thing? See, that's the thing. Like, if you're dealing with alcoholism, nobody should drink then.
Right.
Right?
Because your drinking would affect me.
That's right. Everybody needs to eat healthy now. I mean, let's just where are you going to draw the line? Let's just be full on stupid. If you could have the ability to make it where you would carry out the logic, the leftist logic fully and made them live with it, they wouldn't. That's why a lot of them don't. Like, so Nike, they fired this fully vaccinated marketing manager from their Oregon headquarters because the guy would not upload his COVID shot and booster. Go boost yourself. He wouldn't upload his COVID shot details to the third party app that wanted to share his information with others. I mean, Nike will literally use imprisoned people in a CCP factory to make their crappy sneakers. But they... I mean, yeah, come on now. You've got to download this app for the COVID. The guy's name, Dex Briggs, 53. He was fired because he wouldn't upload his health records to this third-party app. And he was like, yeah, I'm not going to share my health information with an outside firm. I've got my card. I'm willing to show you that, but I'm not going to give my personal information to this outside company. And he was like, I literally have had to restore my finances in that because I've been the victim of identity theft. So they fired him. This guy had the vax card. He checked every box. Notice how those goalposts keep moving? He checked every box. Oh no, your vax card isn't good enough. You need to upload all of your health information to this third party app. Can you guarantee that it's going to be safe? No. No, I can't. But do it. Be obedient, you bastard. Be obedient. That's what it's all about. How dare thou not be obedient? None of this does anything. If you can show somebody the card, then geez, but no, they made him. And I'm sure this guy's probably a leftist and he wears a sweater vest. He's got pierced ears and he wears a sweater vest. I know my husband got pierced. I'm not hating that. But when you do both of those things together, I'm questioning your sanity. Pierced your ears and you're wearing a sweater vest? That's shenanigans. And they're even... The thing that gets me is when leftists have these things that they supported enforced on them. They're like, wait a minute, hold up, what? I'm sorry, I've got my vax card. No, you need to do more. We're going to have to operate on you and look at your guts. Make sure you're okay. Where do you draw the line, you know? We're going to have to go into the bathroom with you and take a stool sample. I mean, where do you draw the line? Do you see my point?
Well, before there.
Where is it, though?
I'm hoping.
Remember, it was 15 days. Now we're over 2 years. It was, now you, I can't even go to New York City. was talking with somebody this morning. They're like, well, you know, we'd love to set up a meeting. Like, and I'm like, yeah, that's great. I can't even walk in any of the buildings up there. I mean, I'd probably get murdered first before I could even, such is the crime. But, you know, that's the other thing. You've got the administration right now who's like, oh my gosh, guys, look what's happening over in Ukraine. They had all these opportunities to stop it. Everybody is just very busy trying to figure out how in the hell their kids are going to get educated. You have dumbed down and reduced educational quality over the past 2 years for an endemic virus that is now mutated into just the common cold almost. You're still trying to get people to be obedient. You're still demanding that they get injected repeatedly, even though it doesn't prevent the virus from being transmitted or do a damn thing, really. Let's be honest. I'm so tired of some of these conservatives out there like, well, it's a shut up. Shut up. Can you show me where? Because, I mean, everybody that I know that has gotten it has been, I mean, half of them have been vaccinated. We all had the same symptoms. So I'm just saying. It's not anecdotal. That's my truth. It's my lived experience, Kane. I tell you what, it's Monday, only Monday. We have a lot more on the way. Does Stephen Yates know what awaits him today? I'm just asking.
He looks forward to it.
Okay. Oh, boy. All right. So, yeah, anybody ask you about your shot, you tell them, go boost yourself.
The Dana Show, sponsored by 30 years of game-changing Kel-Tec innovation, like the P50, a new breed of pistol. Innovation. Performance. Kel-Tec.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
I watched this video. I would have done the same thing. I didn't know the wife was part of it. I just thought it was just him saving his dogs, but okay. A man in Florida is being praised that, yes, ladies and gentlemen, that would be a Florida man after a footage was released showing him wrestling a bear that legit tried to get in the man's house. His name is Walter Hickox. Of course it is. A black bear tried to enter his house and one of his dogs was going at the bear and he wanted to get in there and save his dog, too. He said, not a lot went into my head in the moment other than what's going to happen if he gets past me and into the house where the rest of my dogs and my wife was at. So his dog went at the bear and he can see, I mean, in the video, he's wrestling this bear back through the doorway and he grabs a bench to keep it out. Now, he got some injuries. The dog in the video was not harmed. He said he's going to construct a door for the outside porch and keep a bottle of bear spray nearby or just, you know, a nice gun. You know, I'm just saying, maybe keep you a 45 at least or something there. Come on, man. Although, how much you want to bet if he were to shoot that bear? Oh, no, it's Florida. That's where America is. So they're not going to be as stupid as, say, like Oregon. But, man, I would have done the same thing. I would have done the same damn. I thought I did the thing. Remember when I fought a possum in my backyard because I thought for a moment that it might have been a wolf? Okay, long story. I literally thought I was fighting a coyote at first when I jumped into the darkness. I just went like full on. I didn't care. Turned out it was I punched a possum is what ended up happening. Now I feel bad because they eat mosquitoes and I like that. Tomorrow I'll tell you about the bacon blow up at Waffle House. Stay with us. Stephen Yates is going to join us and we're going to tell you exactly about the agreement with Ukraine, United States, etc. Everything. Stay with us.
There's been clamoring in this town and over in Ukraine for a U.S. ambassador to Ukraine. Where do things stand on appointing somebody?
Certainly understand that. I don't have any update on the status at this point in time.
Oh, this is how you know that it's not an emergency, because we don't even have an ambassador to Ukraine. Good grief. Welcome back to the show. Dana Lash here with you. Always so good to be with you. And we've deep dived on a few things, and we've been talking about this ongoing, the headlines that you're seeing with Ukraine and Russia and what this means for the United States, because Biden is mulling over sending some troops Probably, I don't know, for NATO, could be a couple thousand. Anthony Blinken has not ruled out military involvement. They don't have an ambassador, though. He'll send thousands of troops, but won't send. They'll send troops, but they won't. Democrats won't actually pass sanctions. They'll use that Jim Crow relic, they said, the filibuster, to stop passing sanctions against Russia for Nord Stream 2. Meanwhile, Gazprom, which Nord Stream 2 is their pipeline, has been trolling European countries on Twitter about gas prices because, excuse me, France's nuclear power, they're having difficulty with fuel. Germany's sitting on their hands. They're stopping Estonia from sending any kind of assistance to Ukraine. Denmark is stepping up to send stuff. Everybody's doing stuff except for Germany, because Germany doesn't want to do any. They got rid of all their nuclear plants. They don't want to do anything at all whatsoever to hamper their dirty Russian gas that they get here in the middle of winter. Told you. I mean, I'm not going to say I told you so, but I did. Right. I just want to go back really quickly to this October 22nd, 2012 tweet from the Democrats. Quote, Romney, who calls Russia our number one geopolitical foe, doesn't realize it's the 21st century. Always good to go back in history, which we did actually in our first hour. We were talking about some of the historical illiteracy, whether it's comparing Ukraine to Czechoslovakia in World War II, the importance of our industry, the role of sanctions as it relates to World War II and Japan, because I've seen this used as an excuse as to why we're not, well, we can't sanction Russia because, you know, this or this. I mean, look what happened. It spurred Japan into war. That way we can't sanction China because look what happened with Japan. It spurred this into war. No, actually, that was set 90 years before when you had Commodore Perry go. And when Japan began trading, they wanted to quickly modernize. They did not want to be some sort of colonial outpost. And then they expanded and they had some war atrocities, et cetera, et cetera. So, no, people who say that economic warfare, the sanctions of economic warfare spurred the attack on Pearl Harbor, I said, and I mean it, they should be stripped and whipped completely. So, this, and that was about oil, by the way, because they were expanding their empire. They were fighting. They were preparing to take out our fleet at Pearl Harbor. And 80%, actually over 80% of their oil was provided by the United States. Fun fact. Now, I want to address one thing that I see a lot of people not understand. I had someone tweet to me and say, we promised Ukraine that if they got rid of their nukes, we would protect them. Putin will only understand force and strength, a lesson we should have learned when they took over Crimea. I had said earlier, no American troops should be sent as a remedy or substitute for this administration's nightmare foreign policy. They should send Hunter instead. I said that hours ago. So, no, that is that. This misunderstanding that we promise Ukraine military force at their disposal is not true. You can still like Ukraine. No one dislikes them, but we need to be honest about this. This is all based upon misperceptions over the Budapest Memorandum. And the Budapest Memorandum, which was a United Nations agreement, and I don't like the United Nations, and I think it's a worthless entity, which I've told you before. But to go into it, the United States, it was Russia, the United States, it was Great Britain and Northern Ireland. And they all got together back in 1994 and they signed this treaty. Because, see, when Ukraine became its own independent country after the Cold War, it had a very unusual thing that it inherited, this massive stockpile of nukes. I mean, they had the third largest nuclear arsenal. And so there was some nervousness there. They ended up like they have physical control, but they don't actually control what it does, all this. So that's a whole other accessory conversation to have with this. But as it relates to the Budapest Memorandum, what it says specifically, and it gets into how the Russian Federation, etc., everybody has to reaffirm their obligation. No one uses threat of force, blah, 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 blah. But it also says that Ukraine can exercise within its own sovereignty to secure, you know, itself, etc. But it also says that if Ukraine should become a victim of an act of an aggression or an object of threat of aggression, it talks about nuclear. People were very, very concerned about the nukes that they had, understandably. But what it said is that then people can provide assistance and to try to find some resolution through the United Nations as a way to defend Ukraine from any kind of aggression. It only ever said to provide assistance. And that's not the same thing as sending thousands of troops over to fight a land war with Russia. You can Google Budapest Memorandum and find it, pull it up on UN. Most of the pages, I mean, the whole thing is only a few pages long. Most of it is what the signatories have. But that's what it says. It says that they can provide assistance, and it doesn't say that we'd fight a war for them. Now, here's the thing. Russia insists that the United States violated the Budapest Memorandum and violated all these agreements because of the protests and the uprising in Ukraine against the pro-Russian president at the time. And Russia accused the United States of fomenting that and being the invisible hand that was responsible. It's very interesting because that's what China says that the United States did in Hong Kong, too. They try to say it was a color revolution, right? That what happened in Ukraine was a color revolution and what happened in Hong Kong was a color revolution. And it was the United States secretly working to get Hong Kongers to rise up. I mean, admit completely, which we know is not true. And we're going to talk to Stephen Yates about all of that as well, because that's what Russia cites as a way to say, well, no, you know, it's not, because this memorandum in 94, it's not even a legally binding agreement. However, it was supposed to be done as a measure of good faith. And Russia was saying, well, you know, because this, you know, this the United States, you know, the Euro Maiden, the uprising in Ukraine, that's as a result, we're just not really, they violated this agreement. Now, the other thing, too, is that there's a lot of popular support in Ukraine right now for rearmament because, see, Ukraine inherited all this whole stockpile of nukes. And while they may have had physical control, there were some things that they were not, they couldn't control, basically arming them and launching them and all of that stuff. Russia holds a lot of that. And that, however, does not mean that Ukraine doesn't have the technological capability to actually close some of those gaps. And so after the annexation of Crimea by Russia in 2014, that's one of the things that Ukrainians, they were expressing in polls. They wanted a rearmament. Whew. So there's a lot going on. There's a lot happening here. But this idea that somehow the United States is bound to send our loved ones to fight a land war with Russia because the administration wants to use that as a substitute for craptastic foreign policy and failure of diplomacy. Actually, is it a failure if you haven't even attempted it fully? That's not going to fly. Not going to fly. So one of the things I want to talk about with Stephen Yates when he joins the program is I want to revisit this really fascinating Financial Times piece that talks about Russia and China's their desire for a new world order. It came out over the weekend, and I'll make sure to put it in the email that I send out here shortly. You'll have a prep email in the morning, but I'm going to send you a recap of all of this stuff with Russia and Ukraine later on today. But Russia and China are kind of frenemies. They're not exactly allies. They're competitive, and these are both world leaders. As I said a little earlier, it's difficult for me to feel fear of a tyrant when one of the tyrants is afraid of Winnie the Pooh and the other one is afraid of just aging. And so it's really hard for, you know, I mean, I guess every tyrant has their own eccentricity, but this. I'm curious as to whether or not this means that they're going to work together as a way to distract the United States, because the economy of Russia cannot sustain a full-blown war, and the economy of China cannot sustain a full-blown war. And the United States, because we've decided to erode one of our greatest strengths that actually made us so successful and such a powerhouse in World War II, which is why we could handle two different theaters, you know, with two different enemies, Japan and then Nazi Germany and fascist Italy. That the United States, we did that because we were so industrious. We had our own manufacturing and we had our own resources. And from that, we had our own manufacturing and we were able, I love giving this as an example. After so many ships were damaged in Pearl Harbor, we were able to turn right around. And within 3 months, we were fighting using those ships that were damaged in the Battle of the Coral Sea, taking on the Imperial Japan. I mean, it was unbelievable. The United States could not do that today. So it's weird because you have these, you know, these three players in this situation. And I look at the government, very, you know, the American government right now, very removed, this administration. It's like they've done everything possible to make it more difficult for the United States to be self-sustaining in a situation like that. And not just this administration, going back towards, you know, Barack Obama as well. I have in my notes, I was reading back the Obama Biden dithering Ukrainian policy, as well as what they did for manufacturing, etc. I mean, it's just an absolute nightmare. We have a number, and even under Clinton, Carter was one of the worst. Carter was the worst modern day president. He was the worst president in our lifetime. Well, now Biden maybe actually be worse now. Can you imagine being worse than Carter and that's your legacy? But getting us to this point to where we would not be able to do that again. We're going to talk to Stephen Yates, though, about this. I'm just looking at China and Russia, and I always, one of my favorite board games is Risk. I dominate that game. I will own your soul at Risk. If it's any game with strategy, if it's tower defense, I will eat your soul and own you, and I will enslave everything. All of your military, I'll go and take you. Anyway, I say it facetiously. If I'm Russia or China, I'm wanting to split the resources and split the spoils and enter into an agreement to where we each do our own thing, but we work in tandem in a way to distract the United States and split the United States' ability to properly be able to fully respond to one threat to either threat, because they're both taking place at the same time. If I'm China, even though my economy wouldn't necessarily can't sustain a full on fight against the United States, maybe a divided United States, a distracted United States that's also looking at Russia, maybe then it could. If I'm Russia and China, I'm going to do something now under this president before midterms. If I'm Russia and China, I'm going to look at Taiwan and I'm going to look at Ukraine. That's me. There's no land battle. I can't even believe we're talking about land war in this technological era. Crazy, crazy.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Caltech.
South Korea says Iran is to regain a United Nations vote after delinquent dues paid with frozen funds. Jeez, this is why you know the United Nations is a joke. I get it. It's supposed to be a sandbox for all of the world to come together and pretend that they're engaging in diplomacy and everyone puts a smile on their faces and does their kabuki theater and the UN's free real estate that they get in New York that would be billions of dollars anywhere else. And then they all go back and continue doing shenanigans. So, no. But South Korea says that, okay, well, UN, they get their vote, I guess, after their delinquent dues have been paid. They're expected to get their... This is the UN General Assembly. South Korea paid their delinquent dues with frozen... because they have frozen Iranian funds in the country. So they got their voting rights back. Thanks, South Korea. I feel like I want to not watch my K-dramas now. Oh, I totally do. I'm not even going to lie about it. I'm not even going to pretend. That makes me mad, though. Stop being shady. Stop doing shady stuff. Stop. Okay, I got more. Let's see. This is an Irish person, so I am not surprised by this headline. A Delta passenger mooned a flight attendant and threw a can at a traveler, said the FBI. Now, wait, there's more. He's an Irish football coach. You can't say soccer, because in Europe, they're like, what? It's an Irish football coach. He's out on $20,000 bail. He sat with a drink in his hand on Daytona Beach. He mooned first class Delta passengers on a flight from Dublin to New York City during a dispute over not wearing a mask. His name's Shane McErney. McErney. He was charged with a federal complaint. It was unsealed Friday. He wreaked havoc. They said he wouldn't wear a mask and he had a tyrant on a tyrant. So he also, this is what's funny. He also is alleged to have put his own mask on the on the pilot's head. There you go. Of course he's Irish. Fight me, I'm Irish. Stephen Yates joins us next.
Want a behind-the-scenes look at The Dana Show? Subscribe to Dana's Chapter and Verse newsletter for a deeper dive in all things Dana at danalash.com.
Because Putin knows if I am president of the United States, his days of tyranny and trying to intimidate the United States and those in Eastern Europe are over. I'm going to stand up to him. He's a bully, just like the president. And I know he doesn't want me to be president, but to tell you what, when I'm president, things are going to change.
He can't even remember being president. That's flashback audio from, almost said Brandon. I swear it's a verbal typo and it stays. Joe Biden, welcome back to the show. I'm Dana Lash. I'm made of questions for Stephen Yates. He is the go-to for, I am literally a walking mess of questions because so much has happened. Stephen Yates, just to set the stage, foreign policy expert, was in the Bush administration. Nobody knows this stuff better than Stephen Yates did. He also was head of Radio Free Asia. CCP hated him. Xi Jinping hated him. Probably cursed him every night before he went to bed. And he joins us now on Skype. Stephen, always so good to see you. Okay, so first up, I'm trying to figure out the best way to approach this situation with Ukraine, Russia, the United States, because now we're hearing that the president is considering sending troops over to Ukraine, which seems kind of dramatic, considering that his party could not even pass sanctions against Russia just 2 weeks ago. They used that Jim Crow relic of filibuster. I'm having a hard time taking this thing seriously. It seems a little wag the dog to me because we don't have an ambassador over there. They've refused to take any kind of precautions. Give us your perception of this. And is this just the administration being dramatic?
Well, there is a part of the administration just playing it up. You dial it in very well. There's also a part of the things that have been playing out in the world for some time now. And adjustments that needed to be made by a lot of different parties haven't been fully made. There was a partial rebalancing of things under the Trump administration. The old Europe didn't like it very much that they should have to pay more for their own defense and their collective defense. The alliance that we call NATO has been a grouping in search of a real mission for a long time. It was thrown into the Afghanistan mix, and that didn't come out a happy experiment. And so there's a lot of questions about what is Europe and what is it up to? Why is it that a landmass that has about 20 times the economic weight of Russia somehow doesn't have its own ability to deter Russia to help other fellow Europeans against this bullying? So there's a lot that's outside of the United States, but for sure, Jumping Joe didn't know what he was talking about during the big lie of 2020, which was his campaign. And so he didn't have a plan for coronavirus. He didn't have a plan for Putin, doesn't have a plan for China. Sad for us that none of what he said was true. Now the world knows. I think Putin was pushing on the Ukraine because he was cheesed off at Europe and the Americans for talking about expanding NATO, deploying missile defense, doing things that got on his nerves. I think he was trying to stoke that. But now, after having pushed back on that, and what he sees is Jumpin' Joe going to push back on that by giving him a pipeline, blocking sanctions, telling allies to stand back. I mean, and then what's he see in other parts of the world other than weakness? So at this point, it's kind of hard to argue that Putin was definitely sort of wheels up, ready to go. But now that he's leaned into it and it's an open door, how does he stop?
Right.
And that I think, is the sad setup that the president and old Europe together has put in place. Because look at Germany, huge economy, sizable military and other kinds of resources, and it is just bending in the face of this.
No energy independence. We're talking with Stephen Yates. You can find him on Twitter at YatesComs as well. Yeah, no energy independence. I read that, that essentially they're sitting on their hands, and they were also not approving of Estonia sending any kind of ammunition over to Ukraine. I don't mind sending supplies over, but this idea that we're going to send, you know, thousands of troops over to engage in some sort of Cold War reignited land battle against Russia is insane to me. What is the likelihood, you think, of Biden actually committing to a plan like this, sending thousands of troops?
Well, it should be zero. And it should be something that Congress, at a bipartisan supermajority level, would say no to. And every time a president has committed forces, there have always been grumblings in Congress about their prerogatives and declaration of war or not. All of that would apply here. But even more so, we've talked for weeks, if not months, about this needs to be Europe taking care of its own business. Right. If Germany and others are going to stomp on little old Lithuania with regard to China, little old Estonia with regard to Ukraine, then Americans have no business shedding blood or treasure for said Europeans. We just have to come to that point. We called it America First in the last administration, but really it's a rebalancing to realism. But you gotta carry your own freight, or we're not going to be there for you. And I think that just has to be the cold shower that Europe takes.
Right. And talking about, you mentioned China as well. I wanted to get your thoughts on this piece that was in Financial Times. This was on Saturday. Russia and China's plans for a new world order. They talk about Moscow and Beijing. Ukraine crisis is part of a struggle to reduce American power, make the world safe for autocrats. I realize that Russia and China have an odd relationship. They're kind of frenemies. They see the benefit of each other existing right now to distract the United States, on opposite ends. What is your perception of the theory that they could ally? There's some sort of allyship there, because I don't see China's economy. We've talked about China's economy before. That China could not handle taking on the United States undistracted. Neither could Russia. But if they both tag teamed the United States, with Europe being brought to its knees in winter during this energy crisis that they're facing, what are the odds of them doing something like that?
Well, there's a couple of things. I think the Russia-China axis probably needs to include Iran also. Yeah. And so the thinking of Russia and China is sort of like Henry Kissinger and 19th century great power politics and all of that. But it sort of leaves out that there's other parts of the world that are also heavily affecting how the world turns. And the broader Middle East is definitely that. And Iran has been destabilizing the broader Middle East for some time now. Russia and China play in that game. I see all of these bad actors as having a marriage of tactical convenience. They are not strategically aligned. They're very different economies, very different societies, very different cultures, and they're moving in different directions. They all hate it when Uncle Sam is organized and brings some allies along, and they like it when Uncle Sam is distracted and doesn't have allies come along. So that's kind of the Venn diagram part that overlaps. But I am never really that moved by egg-headed professors or people who have global strategist in their title trying to write an article telling me that this power and that power are going to set a new order. There is no freaking order in the world unless there's a strong America to keep the peace. Right. That's just it. That's the whole game. That's the whole enchilada. We can like it or dislike it, but there's no memo that's going to change that.
Right. And speaking of Iran, too, this stunned me. And I actually thought I was misreading this. It's from Reuters. It says South Korea says Iran is to regain their UN vote. The UN is kind of like, that's the sandbox where all the kids play. It's not really, I can't take it seriously. South Korea says Iran is to regain the UN vote after delinquent dues were paid with frozen funds. So apparently South Korea paid the bill. They buried the lead way down in the thing. A South Korean finance ministry official declined to say how much Iranian frozen funds are left after the payment of dues. But Iran had asked South Korea last week to help pay that contribution with frozen funds, and apparently they did it. This is South Korea. I feel like I can't support this by watching K-dramas anymore. Does this move surprise you?
I know it's going to shock the auto market. It's going to shock the TV market and movie market. But now the government of South Korea has been more globalist than U.S. allied centric for some time. And remember, the former August Secretary General of the United Nations was Ban Ki-moon from right. South Korea. And so, this kind of thing is really disappointing. But number one, I don't think anyone should pay any dues to the United Nations, full stop. Yes. And certainly, I don't think anyone should be paying Iran's dues. I don't know what South Korea thought it was going to get, but I've heard from allies for two decades that if the United States isn't going to be serious about taking on the Iran threat, then don't block us from trying to mitigate that threat or regional instability by investing there and trying to shape events on the ground. The Japanese would occasionally approach us like that. The South Koreans would. Other allies would. But it all begins with the premise of if the United States is not serious about this, then we're balancing, which means we're leaving the United States behind and we're going to play in the ugly, muddled world as it is. So that's the way I read this move. But I think it stinks. I think that in the right world, the United States would be leaning on our ally not to do that kind of thing. Yeah. But really, if we'd passed a sobriety checkpoint, no one would be paying the United Nations because it's corrupt, doesn't accomplish anything, and should just go away.
Yeah, and they should not get all that free real estate there in Manhattan like they do.
I think a big golden building should be built there with an evil name on it.
We could do Stephen Yates. I like his suggestion. All right, last, I mean, I could talk to you for an hour today. There's so many things. But speaking of Iran, and I had this from CNN and Reuters, there's been devastating airstrikes that took place a few days ago in Yemen. UAE is blocking missiles because you have the Houthis now attacking their business hub. This is all of this factors in, as you were saying, too, that destabilization in the Middle East and Iran, Yemen, they're all right there. Talk to us a little bit about this, because this is another cog in this giant wheel.
It is. And it's the alleged deal makers that come out of the European School of the Foreign Service, that fill all the top appointed positions, that every controversy we faced from Libya to other things has involved people in this European School of the Foreign Service. They think that they are the smartest egghead in the room and they're going to make deals with tyrants. And so they have loved going back to the Iran deal 2.0. But really what it did is it broke the momentum that had built in the Trump administration in getting Arab allies to form economic and diplomatic partnerships that expanded peace, prosperity, a better path to the future, that didn't overemphasize Iran and the Palestinians. It looked to building positive things outside of that, I think, briar patch. And so I think this is another example of a willful error on the part of the president and his team that has made that region worse. And all of this just enables bad guys, whether it's China, Russia, Iran, anywhere. It's sad. We're only at year one.
Golly.
And this is where we are.
That's a nice reminder. We are only at year one. Good heavens. Stephen Yates. Well, now I'm depressed. Stephen Yates at YatesComs. Go and it's the goth Twitter stream for foreign policy. Everything goth and sad. No, always good to talk with you, Stephen. I hope you have a great week at YatesComs. Go and find him. Always a great resource of a great collection of information. Good to see you, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you, Dana. Take care.
Listen to The Dana Show live on the Odyssey app. Weekdays, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Time.
Ned Price, who does not have jackets that fit him. First off, welcome back to The Dana Show. Is on talking about Russia. I'll have any updates. I'm sending out a recap email for you of the stuff we talked about today, specifically as it relates to foreign policy. I don't want you freaking out over this stuff. You don't need to. But I'm going to send that out to you so you know everything that's going down and you just have a lay of the land. All this week, the other thing that I'm going to be doing is we talked a little bit about this today in first hour. We're going to be looking at the stupid World War II comparisons that people are trying to make with Russia with the way Russia is acting in Ukraine or with Ukraine to justify conflict. And I also want to talk about why the hell do we allow Russia today to operate? It's a propaganda entity. You know that, right? RT hates me. They hate me so bad. And I mean, there are a few things in life that I am ridiculously proud of. My children, my marksmanship with a rifle, Russia Today hating me. because it's Kremlin founded and funded. They still fund it. Kremlin funds it. And the fact that a Kremlin mouthpiece is mad at me, I don't know if I could feel more patriotic than I am right now. Like if I burped right now, it would be literally fireworks of red, white, and blue stars. That's how patriotic it makes me feel. I get this warm, fuzzy feeling. That's amazing. Anyway, though they hate me. They hate me so bad. Anyway, so I want to, all throughout this week, I want to take just bits and pieces from World War II, even going into World War I. I'm a huge, huge World War II nerd. Love it. My dream vacation is to go to all the major battle spots in the South Pacific, by the way. I mean, that's, and I would love to do, also go to Sicily and do that whole, you know, the race to Messina. Anyway, I am so tired with people who are historical illiterates looking at these things that have happened in history and using it to say, well, this happened because of this. So this is why we either can't do this or we must do this for this outcome here. Because it ignores the very different circumstances. But I see people doing this on CNN. I've even seen like some of the War Inc. doing it on some other cable networks that you might like. And I'm not just, I mean, there are a couple of them. So it's incredibly important to just make sure that we touch on that. And I want to do that all throughout the week. Because this is, it's incredibly important to make sure, it's very important. And we're going to watch all of this stuff with Russia, because now, what is it? The Pentagon said that they have their forces on heightened alert for any kind of NATO deployment. Send Hunter. Speaking of which, the January 6th panel, if they're going after Ivanka, notice the government's treatment of Trump's grown children and not how they will not do anything with Biden's grown child. They protect. We'll talk about that more in depth tomorrow. Today in Stupidity Kane.
All right, this is our president from, I believe this is over the weekend, but he refuses to take questions, and he explains why. Listen to this.
God bless you all, and may God protect our troops. And by the way, the reason we're not going to have any time for questions now is these guys got to get quickly on the plane and go out and do a major announcement in Ohio, and you guys will ask me all about Russia and not about anything having to do with chips.
Jeez.
That's our president.
Jeez, everyone. That's our president. I'll be on Fox's primetime this evening in the 6 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Eastern hour. Make sure you sign up for that newsletter. Watch your inboxes. I'm going to be sending you some good stuff tomorrow morning and today. Have a great night. Back with you tomorrow.